All right. Well, Sarah, first of all, let's talk a little history. If you were going to write a book on New Orleans, are there any events or people that you'd want to
Okay,
write
so here's
about?
my problem with you people. You have this whole thing for Andrew Jackson that I find completely abhorrent. I know he's like the great hero of the Battle of New Orleans or whatever, which, by the way, a battle he won after that war had already was already over, but thanks to slow communications, he had no idea. But anyway, this is the battle where he makes his name and becomes the national hero and becomes president just in time to establish this Indian removal policy that gets my Cherokee ancestors their whole like land taken away from them and marched at gunpoint by the United States Army across the continent to Oklahoma, where I was born. So in my family, Andrew Jackson, it's like if you talk about the like villains of, history or mythology, there's like Satan and then Andrew Jackson and then, all of the other like bad guys. He is from, in a Cherokee household, that guy. There's no difference between him and the devil, So, like, you guys have that whole square with that big statue of him on his horse and everything. So, I find your Andrew Jackson fixation to be a little off-putting. But then, I mentioned when I was growing up, I was a musician, and my absolute teen hero, I was a trumpet player. So, of course, my hero was Louis Armstrong. So you do have that going for you, and he does have more to do with New Orleans than Andrew Jackson. But all your like Jackson-named things, I could do without.
I'm just curious how your last trip to Jacksonville went, though.
I think I've ever been to Jacksonville. I have been to Andrew Jackson's plantation, though, and I have to say I probably could have been a little more polite to the people working there,
Yeah,
So.
well, what you just said, it sounds kind of like you might be planning a little book on Andrew Jackson.
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to spend 3 years with that man. No way. We could talk about Louis Armstrong. When I was a kid, I was just obsessed with him. And he would sing that song, That's My Desire. And there's the part that goes, drink a little glass of wine, gaze into your eyes divine, and feel the touch of your lips pressing on mine. And then when he would sing it again, he would say, I feel the touch of your chops all wrapped up amongst mine. And that, I would just puzzle over that because I knew what he did was better writing, but it didn't really jibe with what I was learning in English class. And I still, have that kind of in me. Sometimes if I'm writing something and it's too stiff, I think less your lips and more your chops,
Absolutely. Now, if you were going to, I guess, how do you feel New Orleans kind of fits in with the context of the United States? Like, what member of the family would it be, in relation to other cities in America?
Drunk uncle. You do like to have a good time, which is, I do have a, I'm actually a bit of a Puritan. I quit drinking. I have a lot of food allergies. But mainly the I quit drinking part. Sometimes going there, it's one of those places that just reminds me how not very fun I am. Almost to like a super comical degree. Like I have this friend, my friend's father, and I remember in New Orleans being out to dinner with him, and he saw one of his neighbors, and he was going to send over a bottle of champagne to the table. And I looked at him, and I was like, "Have you noticed that woman looks like she's about 8 months pregnant?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, they're having a baby." I'm like, "Well, I don't think she's probably going to drink your champagne." And he like looks at his wife, and he's like, "Is that true?" So to me, like that's the kind of New Orleans fun time story. So they're like, I think you would probably be whatever member of the family you are. I don't know, but you're probably the most happy-go-lucky member. The one that makes everyone else feel like a total stiff, myself included. But I'm cool with that.
That's true. We do like to have a good time. Spend Mardi Gras curled up in the fetal position, though, so some of us do, some of us don't, but
It's funny hearing Brian talk and kind of refer to himself as a native just makes me think, kind of bringing it back to New Orleans, but this city, I'm not from here. I'm actually from New York. you know, it's such a big deal here that, are you from here? Where are you from? That whole thing. Where'd you go to high school? And I'm wondering, have you come across other cities where you feel like this native versus newcomer,
oh, yeah,
you know, is really like a present part of the environment?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I know in New Orleans, being from New Orleans is a very big deal, and I guess I can understand why. I mean, sometimes when I was working on my book about the history of Hawaii, I kind of lived in Honolulu part-time for a couple of years, and that place, it's even more like that than New Orleans. And but there's, who is a Hawaiian is a big question in Hawaii, and because it's so multi-ethnic now, but it has to do with the Native Hawaiians and how they lost control of their country. It was their own country, and then it became annexed by the United States in a way that peeved the Native Hawaiians. So there's this break in the 1890s when the United States takes over Hawaii that no one has completely gotten over there. And I remember I was speaking at this school, the high school where President Obama attended, actually, and I was speaking to the teachers, and I was talking about one of the kings of Hawaii, and, you know, they have one of those Hawaiian, they all have the Hawaiian names that have 16 letters, half of them are K, and I just made some aside, like, oh, I hate saying Hawaiian names in front of Hawaiians, and one of the teachers was driving me back to my hotel, and he said, I didn't know how to feel when you called us Hawaiians. I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, I don't think of myself as a Hawaiian. And I knew this guy. He was like, but you were born here, and you went to school here, and now you teach at this school where you went to school, and you've lived here your entire life. And he said, yeah, but I just don't think of myself as a Hawaiian because, you know, his father was a Holocaust refugee and his mother was Japanese. I'm Japanese American. And he's like, yeah. And you know, my father was of Jewish descent, but his family had, they had converted to Catholicism, you know, like 100 years before the Nazis rose to power. So they were of Jewish descent, but they hadn't been practicing Jews for a century, you know, and his father had been this Jew who didn't really feel Jewish, but he was Jewish enough for the Nazis, so he had to leave Germany, and then he ends up in Hawaii having this son who doesn't think of himself as Hawaiian, and it's just, I mean, there are so many stories like that there where it's just generation of generation of people who feel kind of stateless or something if they don't have Native Hawaiian ancestry, and it's real kind of, it's an ongoing argument there, and that always sort of made me sad for them and kind of happy to go back to New York where it's just like, ugh, if you're here, you're a New Yorker, you know, and there is something less sad about that, but it's also partly possible because, you know, I think the last Native in New York City maybe died 2.5 centuries ago, you know, so it is a kind of more welcoming atmosphere made possible by the fact that the original inhabitants have been dead for 200 years, you know.
Right.
But there's something to be said for those places that where like being a homegrown person really matters and means something. But
well, Sarah, you kind of pegged us pretty well just there.
And you know, yeah, that Hawaiian teacher, that really kind of sums up the ultimate complex of the Jew, which is like, oh, I don't really think I'm anything but else. I'm not Hawaiian, I'm Jewish.
Right.
You know, I don't think I'm from New Orleans, I'm a Jew.
Yeah.
So there's always that.
Let's kind of finish up with, you know, you've done some film work. You've also done some voice work. For The Incredibles, is that something you'd want to do more of?
I really loved that whole experience. They cast me in that movie because they liked my public radio documentaries. So the one thing I always hated coming out of public radio was at the end of every session, you have to do all the nonverbal sounds like scream or, you know, sigh, or there were the parts where just have to make a noise like you're being, like the kind of noise you would make when you're being hit. And I remember I was just so terrible at it, I would say, you're going to have to hit me. And, you know, like, it was such a great experience. I mean, partly because writing books for a living, you're just kind of by yourself for your whole life, you know. So it was kind of nice to have this whole social job and to be part of that Pixar experience. And, I mean, I learned so much about the whole process of how those movies get made and the lighting and the music and the technology just kind of blow. Like, you should see the character I played. I had really long flowing hair, and at that point, the technology wasn't there to make it wasn't. They didn't have the technology to make that girl's hair. And so the whole process of making the movie, almost until the end, my character and all the versions I saw up until, you know, it was done, she was bald because there was this team of guys up in a room somewhere working on her hair, you know. And every so often the producer would go up there and, like, how's the hair going, guys? And they're still, like, the hair is still theoretical. I mean, it was just such an amazing thing to be part of and to, like, watch them work.
I think we're going to title this interview "The Hair Is Still Theoretical." Sarah Vow, author of Unfamiliar Fishes, The Wordy Shipmates, and Assassination Vacation, speaking at Tulane University on April 16th. Thanks so much for speaking with us. It was a thrill.
Oh, my pleasure.